Today's episode is sponsored by Theatrical Index. Theatrical Index has been the comprehensive resource for theater professionals for over 40 years. Yeah, it's an accurate, factual, and up-to-date listing of all the shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, touring productions, and the premieres across the country. It's an insider's guide to the who, what, when, and where of the theater business. Subscribers can find out what's happening now or next year, as well as who is working to make it happen. And now the information goes deeper with new web features, including exclusive interactive grosses section, custom pro lists, and more. For more information on subscriptions or how to get a copy of Theatrical Index, go to theatricalindex.com or email their customer service at circulation@theatricalindex.com.
Hey, I think of you as someone I would like to be. Tell me, how do I find my part in this? I've already put all of my heart in this art. The art of not making it.
Hello. It's the first episode. Well, the first episode where I am interviewing someone, and that is crazy. I'm really excited. I'm very nervous about doing this. And honestly, that first episode, the introductory one where I kind of talk about myself, I want it to be funny. I want it to be my dumb sense of humor. And it's just kind of heartfelt. And I'm finding that most of these podcast episodes are actually pretty heartfelt. I mean, when I get the comedians in there, it's just hilarious. But yeah, it's a podcast with heart. Who would have thunk, you know? This is going to be a great first episode. At this point in time, I will be in Rome. So I will be eating lots of pasta and pizza by the time this episode airs. I am very excited about Rome. I'm going all over Europe. I'm taking a trip just for the sake of taking a trip, which I'm not very good at doing. And it's going to be a great time. I have not planned out like I need to. So, which for me, I'm a bit of a control person. I like knowing everything around me so that I can then adjust and make the best decision. So the fact that I can only do so much of that because I've never been there before and I have no point of reference is a little bit, I'm having to check that with myself. Not going to lie. It's going to be a month of just me exploring the world and different cultures. And honestly, I'm traveling alone, so getting away from people is going to be great. Not going to lie. I'm also going to be trying some hippy dippy stuff where I will not apologize for this or feel embarrassed, but I'm going to try to get into the habit of like maybe a gratitude journal and meditating, just even taking walks and letting myself just be in the present. I've done that on occasion the past few months, and I've always feel so much better when I do, but it's not a habit yet. So it's definitely something on my mind I'd like to incorporate. And maybe once I come back to New York, it's going to be a fresh slate. So I guess let's just get into it. That's why you're all here, isn't it? So we have Liz Fleming today. She's wonderful. You're going to love her. So she moved to New York City to be an actress. And then, you know what? Her path didn't take what she expected it to be. Go figure. Hence, perfect podcast guest. I've known Liz for probably about 5 years now. I found her motivating. And it's so good to see how her company, Out of the Box Theatrics, has grown and just become one of the leading new theater companies in New York City. A little bit about Out of the Box Theatrics. It was founded in 2015 by Liz. It's dedicated to producing new and classic works immersively in site-specific locations performed by a diverse company of actors hired regardless of gender, race, creed, ethnicity, or disability. You know what? Out of the Box challenges audience to experience work outside of their expectations and strives to diversify American theater by providing an inclusive and accessible platform for our artists and patrons. That's why I love it. She saw that there was a hole in the industry and she decided to make a change. I recently, the night of this podcast, I had seen her, their most recent performance of The Pink Unicorn, which is a one-person play with the actress who was phenomenal in the show, Alice Ripley. Yeah, that Alice Ripley. The Tony Award-winning Alice Ripley. The Next to Normal Alice Ripley. The Sideshow Alice Ripley. That's the one. Yeah, no biggie. And she was amazing. You'll hear me gushing. And when I'm excited, I often will use the same word over and over again to describe how I'm feeling because words are no longer accessible for my brain to correctly identify my feelings. So I am so sorry. But that's what you're going to hear in the very beginning. And it's because it was true. She was so, so amazing. I had no idea she was one of the best actresses I've ever seen in a production. And you'll hear why I think that. So let's just roll with it. I'm probably eating a pizza right now in Rome. I'm also probably lost at the time of this podcast too. So send me a text, check in on me, and let's get going.
I think I said it downstairs, but the show was so good.
Oh, thanks, Tiffany.
So, so good.
Yeah, she's so great.
Yeah, the whole thing, though, it wasn't... Alice was amazing. Insanely talented. I've never seen her do a play.
Yeah, so she hasn't done one in, like... She said it was... It's been, like, maybe 30 years since she's done one. She's like, I haven't done one since I was, like, a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was terrified, she said, but she was, like, really... It was kind of a crazy experience that she ended up saying yes to it.
That actually makes me feel good to hear that, because what she does, if anyone gets to catch the performance of this, it's insane, because she carries the whole thing, because it's just her as a one-woman show. But she's just so good.
She is.
I have, like, a bit of a pet peeve when I see... manufactured acting. And I don't know if everyone feels this way, but when it looks like it's been so rehearsed, every choice they're making,
yeah,
that it's not being lived in anymore, it's not humanized, it's you know, a caricature. I was like, the whole time, one of the things I love about her is I don't know how much of the rehearsal is very been set, the choices, like, you can tell the blocking maybe leads to certain places, but the lines themselves feel very lived in.
Yeah, she never does the same thing every night.
Yeah, I love
which
that.
Is I think what's so interesting about her as an actress, and I love that about it when actors can do that, when it's new every time.
Yeah,
because your audience changes, your feeling about how you're personally feeling every single day changes, so like it impacts your performance in some way. And I just love that she is open to just being where she is and finding some really cool, interesting choices every time. It's unusual. There aren't a lot of actors that can do that.
But even the writing, everything, it's just so good.
Yeah.
Props to you as well.
Oh,
I mean,
thanks.
Well, you know what? I should say that right from the beginning, because this is right after the show. Mm-hmm. We went upstairs at the cell and we're talking right now. And I find you amazing. I was gonna sing your praises at the end, but I'll do it the whole time. It's fine. But I remember when you were starting up this theater company, when you were talking about it, we met doing
book club.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out how we were, and yes, yeah, that's how we met. And I remember you offhandedly mentioned you were doing this company.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I just loved it from the beginning, the concept, but what you've done with it since then and how it's grown and how you put action behind what you said you were going to do with it, too.
Yeah.
Because do you want to talk about what Out of the Box Theatrics?
Yeah. So my company, Out of the Box Theatrics, we're committed to hiring an inclusive company of artists with no regard for gender, race, creed, ethnicity, and disability. And we produce all site-specific immersive work in order to challenge our audience's expectations.
Mm-hmm.
That's our mission statement. you know... Without of the box, I never set out to have a company. I set out to do one show in an immersive way with a unique cast, and it all sort of happened all on its own. And once you start something that you realize that you care about, I think I'm a big believer in follow through. So then I said to myself, I just got to keep going with this. I got to keep pushing forward.
Yeah. Yeah, so. And can we talk about how that started? Because you started... Sure. Actually, did you study music in college?
I did. I got a Bachelor of Music in Musical Theater at Westminster School of Music in Princeton, New Jersey.
And is that program, is it... You're also taught classical singing, and it's a little more
A conservatory.
Because I'm a music, like my degree's in music and classical training. And we had a musical theater division within the music program as well as the musical theater program in a completely different building. So I was wondering, but the people who were in the musical theater division in the music program, I mean, they were doing art songs and arias. Was it similar?
It was similar. I had to take a piano proficiency, like where I had to, you know, accompany two musical theater pieces and have somebody sing them and then do a classical piece. And then,
Did you enjoy that? Did you feel like it prepared you for theater?
Yeah, I did enjoy learning how to, I mean, I think it was helpful to learn how to read music. I don't know if it really prepared me for New York musical theater life, where it's really, they don't care if you've taken 5 years of music theory.
No.
They want to know if you can dance and if you can sing well enough and act, and they want to know if you can do it really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the thing. I felt so lost after I got my music degree and I moved up here and I realized nothing I had studied would be... I mean, it helped me in certain categories. Like if I was doing a reading or a workshop for a musical, I always felt confident about I'd learn the music fast and I had that musical ear. But all of the other skill sets, especially getting a book, knowing your type, knowing how to sell yourself and what you offer, as well as dancing and all that, no, I was not ready at all. So did you have a similar...
Yes. I remember I when I first moved to the city, I took a class with Bob Klein, who I love. But he was actually really helpful because I walked in and I sang As Long As He Needs Me from Oliver, and I was 21 years old, and he was like, why are you singing that? He was like, you look 12, and that's not what you're going to do. But I had no idea because my school hadn't prepared me for that, and I played all the women, like older women roles in college, and I came out and I just didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
And it was such a learning curve, especially when I was thrown into dance callbacks and things like that, where we were only given like a year of ballet, a year of tap, and a year of jazz at my school.
Gotcha. Did you feel like you were someone who can fake it in the audition?
Yeah, I was able to. I mean, I grew up doing a lot of theater, so I was fortunate that I could fake it.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I also have a visual impairment, so it was hard for me to pick up choreography really fast.
Can we talk about that? Because I didn't know much about that. And I think I specifically saw on the website you talked about that was part of your experience.
Yeah. It was a harsh reality when I moved to New York, because I don't think that musical theater in New York in the audition scene is incredibly, it's not handicap accessible.
Yeah.
And when I was thrown into, I think it was like 42nd Street was one of my very first dance callbacks, which was really hard. And I remember I was thrown to the back and I couldn't see anything, which happens to everybody anyway in those massive dance calls.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I asked to move to the front, they were like, we don't have time for a lot of questions and a lot of people to try to move to the front. And I couldn't see anything. And then on top of that, I got to the front and I still couldn't see what I was doing because I was so behind, and then I have no peripheral vision. So it was like, it was really hard to pick up choreography that needed to be picked up so fast. And I remember feeling humiliated because I couldn't pick it up in time.
And I'm sure there wasn't like a singular example of it. Like even if you got a job, you probably felt scared to bring it up in a rehearsal or something.
Yeah,
like
I usually
that.
Didn't tell people. What I would do is, you know, I would come in, and I remember I had to do Grease in 6 days, was one of my first contracts that I happened to book in New York. And I remember the dance, the hand jive they were teaching us, and I could not see anything. And the first day I was a mess. And so what I did is I asked my friend Lori, who was in the company with me, and I asked her to help me. And I was like, I need you to do it right in front of me. Like I need to just, and so I would learn it like all night I would like work on it for like 4 hours after rehearsal. And then I would come in the next day so that nobody would know that I didn't know, that I didn't, couldn't see what was happening.
That's amazing though. You found a way to work around it. You were working double the work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And eventually I learned how to be open about it, but I think I didn't want people to think it was a weakness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
So I have a couple questions about, so you moved here and you were doing the acting thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're already dealing with that, but I also, which we had talked about, which is part of why you started everything you've been doing.
Yeah.
Is typecasting.
Mm-hmm.
So you also had personal issues with that as well, which I have had.
Yeah.
I didn't even look for an agent for the last few years because I felt so insecure about the way I would be asked how to like, what box am I going to want to be in?
Yeah.
And everyone has a different opinion with me, especially in musical theater. And I just did not know how to verbalize. I also didn't know how to feel comfortable owning my space and saying who I am and that's how I want to present myself and hopefully you get it, hopefully you don't. Comedy has helped me personally. So,
oh yeah.
And comedy, they really value your individual skills and what's unique about you.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I would say, maybe musical theater because it's so fast. There's dance, there's singing, there's acting, and there's so many people they can choose from. They do go very quick into like, okay, what box are you? Are you like the person we've cast previously? Do you fit the similar mold?
Right.
All of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you have a similar issue?
I did. You know, I heard a lot of, it was mostly, we don't know what to do with you.
Yeah. I got that phrase a lot.
Or, you know, it's not that I didn't get called back for things, but then I would get in the room and they'd be like, but we're not sure.
Yeah.
Where you're going to go. And I remember auditioning for Hairspray and they told me, it's an awful thing to say. They told me I didn't look white enough. And I was like, what does that mean? First of all, that's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
And also, isn't that a musical about acceptance? And then, I mean, I don't know. But then I was like, well, why can't anybody play that part? Why can't a Latino person play that part? Why can't, I mean, sure, I get the dynamic between African American and the, you know, I understand that what that show is about, but it was just a weird comment. And then, you know, when I got to the city, I was a little heavier set. And I remember being told that I needed to lose weight to fit my exact type, which was more of like a character actor who could veer off into like, ingenue, whatever the hell that means.
Yeah, I would get similar statements about that I'm more of a character actress, but I can play ingenue depending.
Right.
Like, I remember I had someone specifically say, well, you could play that role regionally, but you can never expect to play that on Broadway.
Yes.
It's like, that is such a weird statement for me to hear. And I remember I have a similar story of I auditioned for a regional production. I don't remember the show or what it was, but the casting director took the elevator down with me and they specifically were like, we don't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
Don't take it personally, but there's just nothing. And it was, I remember though being so numb to it though, because it was a show that had nothing to do with typecasting.
Yeah.
It was a show that was about, supposed to be about like an everyday group of people.
Yeah.
And it just really, really made me feel icky inside. And also I'm white. Mm-hmm. I'm part Asian, but I'm mainly white. So I feel like I already have a benefit as someone who's a white actress. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, I've had friends of color who have beautiful soprano voices who I think is changing now, but 5 years ago would be like, I get told I don't sound black enough or I don't sound like this.
I've had friends say that before, too.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily, I think, the entire industry, but it made me just feel so little.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so
I
don't know how I can do this for 20 years, 30 years, you know, a full career of this feeling like I do now, you know? So that's why I think what you're doing is so important. It's part of the reason I wanted to do this podcast, because I think what is unique about an individual should be, you can take what's unique about an individual, look at the script, look at the story, and then see if they match with that individual and that story or that character. But just to say someone isn't, because of a box you perceive that has nothing to do with any of that, I have an issue, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So in regards to your, well, it wasn't a theater company yet, but you, what was the turning point where you're like, let me take control?
I was fortunate enough to get, once I booked my first job out of New York, I started working all the time. It was mostly because that house, I was a recommendation to another theater, and then I started just kind of skyrocketing into this loop of getting work through friends. And I loved doing it. There's nothing better than being on the road and doing what you love. And then it became like a chase. It became like, I was non-union at the time, and I remember feeling like I just needed to find my next gig because nobody would think I was good enough unless I found my next gig, and I just needed to keep gigging. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of lost my reasoning for doing it. Yeah. Like, all of a sudden, it just became a job.
Yeah.
And I remember in I was in North Carolina, and I had done Oklahoma, and was in the ensemble, and I was understudying two of the roles. And then I did Dracula.
Which production? Was it a musical? Or
It was a play. It was a play adaptation of Dracula.
Okay.
And it was at a really very nice company called the Temple Theater in North Carolina. Okay. And Peggy Taphorn, the artistic director, is great. But so I hope she doesn't listen to this. And then I got a production of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the musical.
Those are very different shows.
Yeah. All three very different shows.
Yeah.
And I was playing Mrs. Donner, and they were doing like 10 shows a week. It was insane. And I was hating it.
Yeah.
And I remember being on stage, and I was wearing these giant antlers on my head, and I felt like I was watching myself do the play. Like, I felt like I was watching. I was in slow motion. I was like, what are you doing? You are not happy.
Yeah.
And you are not doing anything that fulfills you, and you're just doing this to do this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think I need to spend some time back in New York and really figure out what I want to do here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was really wanting to be union at the time. I was tired of the chase of being non-equity.
I ask how far in being an actor in New York City this was?
5 years.
5 years, yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, I came to New York with not even EMC points. Like, I was just having to really figure it out.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go back to New York and not have my card, and I think that was partly why I kept chasing the dream. And then I was like, but I think it's okay if I come back and I don't have my card and I figure out a way to be happy, because I'm not happy right now.
Yes, yeah.
And so I spent some time behind the table. I learned a lot about what I didn't like seeing with casting directors and the game and what people were saying about people auditioning. And I was like, this is so not what I want our industry to be. This is not why I got into theater in the first place. I think I need to figure out a way to change it. I don't know how to change it, but I'm going to figure it out. And then I saw like this advertisement for You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown on Facebook. Somebody was like advertising it for some reason. I don't even remember why. And I was like, oh, I really want to do that. Oh, what if I did that on a playground? Oh, what if I did that with a cast of really unique actors? And I did it under a full equity contract. And I just found my own path and I got my card that way. That was like my first thought. And then I was like, how am I going to do that? Yeah. And my friend was like, I have this guy, Ethan Paulini, who's my coach, and he's done that before. He's started his own company and his own show, and it was a full off-Broadway thing, and he knows how to do it. So I met with him, and I sat in his couch, and he's like, well, this is a really great idea. When do you want to do this? And I was like, I don't know, like next month? And he was like, no, you can't do it next month. You have to like fundraise something like $15,000 to do that. I was like, oh my God.
That's so great you had him though.
Yeah, and I was really fortunate to find him. He's now my associate artistic director.
I saw that, yeah.
And he taught me. He just said, okay, so this week you're going to plan your very first fundraising event. You're going to start your social media platform. You're going to do this. And he would give me the steps. And I just started doing it. And I was like, I'm just going to keep doing it. And before I knew it, $15,000 later and finding spaces and a school that wanted to do the show, it was cast. We did it. It was really successful. I recouped all that I lost. And I was like, oh my God, maybe this is something I should do. And I had already started my non-for-profit status as out of the box theatrics. So I was like, I'm going to keep going. And my friend wanted to do Master Harold and the Boys in a tea shop. And I was like, oh.
And so that's how it went site specific.
Mm-hmm. I was like, what if everything we did was site specific and inclusive?
Mm-hmm.
And what if that was what I created? And that would excite me as a theater goer. So why don't I just do that? I didn't realize it was going to be as hard as it was going to be, but especially because I wanted to do it under a full equity contract. And I was, the thing is that I started it because I was like, I want to be equity. And then I got a job being equity anyway. And then it became like, that's not what it became about anymore.
Right.
It really became about creating a space for actors, an off-Broadway professional place for actors who weren't going to be judged so harshly and were going to have a platform that they felt valued, where they wouldn't have to walk into something feeling like they weren't enough. Because I think as actors, we constantly feel like we're just not enough.
Absolutely.
And you are. It has nothing to do with you. And I know I get really sick of hearing that shit, but like, it's true.
It's true. And you had this perspective because you had been helping with the casting.
And yeah. That, yeah. And it really helped to know that it has very little to do with you.
Right. It's so hard to remember that though.
It
you
is.
You can hear that, but
yeah,
you can feel so small.
You can.
That,
you and know? it's okay to feel small because I mean, I think you're not human if you're not hurt by it.
Exactly.
It's such a painful business. And if Out of the Box can be any sort of platform for people to not feel so unbelievably unseen, then good.
That's I admire you so much.
Oh,
I just think what you're doing is amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm
yeah.
like gushing. Well, it's just so important. And also, I think another thing that's inspiring about you is that this started from something much smaller scale.
Yeah.
And just by the art of doing it, mm-hmm. you learned and you developed and it became something so much bigger.
Yeah.
You know?
It did. It became yeah. much bigger than I ever thought it would.
Yeah, but it's just amazing. It's so inspiring. So so that happened. And then was that your first season?
It was my first season,
without
yeah.
without calling it maybe that in the moment?
Or yeah.
Or was it structured?
It had to be a season because I had to start a transitional contract through the Actors Union. So,
right.
Which is that where you get sense. 3 years and it's an off-Broadway contract that transitions you into like a full off-Broadway. And so I knew I had to do a season that season and then do a second one and then do a third one. And then the thing is that your pay scale goes up every single year so that you're slowly graduating to becoming full off-Broadway.
I understand now.
Yeah. It was challenging. I was very lucky to find Alice's Teacup for my first year because they gave me free space. And I did every show there, and they were all really great and well-received. And it started off that I would do, like, a week of performances, and now we're doing, like, a month of shows, and we're extending, and it's wild.
So amazing. And then also you were raising money through cabarets and open mics. And
through open mics. I happened to meet people along the way that gave me large amounts of money, and I don't know how it happened. People saw the work we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was received well, and they would give to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's getting harder because we're getting bigger. But I will say that people are, if they believe in what you're doing and think that it serves a purpose, they will give you the funds to create it. And sometimes you just have to be, you just can't be fearful of it because you're never going to have enough money.
Right. Oh, it's true.
Yeah.
True,
so
at any scale, right?
In your
yeah.
personal or... in like your
well it only
work
opens
life.
Up more doors too
yeah
and that's the thing you want to keep moving forward
yeah
unfortunately money usually needs to back
it does.
That you know
it does
how did you get some of your creative team
friends they were my colleagues you know they were actors like me I mean Ethan I met as I mentioned just because he was my coach and I hired him as a director
mm-hmm.
And we had this great working relationship where we could yell at each other and get annoyed with each other, but then we would always figure it out and he would always make it better. And I'd always be like, stop telling me that I have to do that. And he'd be like, but you have to do it. And I'd be like, okay, fine. And I needed somebody to keep me in check
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And to push the boundaries because I was very fearful at the beginning. But then Carrie, my director of marketing, she was somebody I did a production with in Ohio and she had experience in it and she fell into it. She was like, I just want to help. How can I help? And I was like, can you help me with social media? And she just went into it. And then, the other member of my team, Frank Hartley, who does a lot of our technical work and, helps with kind of everything. He kind of does everything. I met him through my fiance's friend, Mary, and we just sort of connected that way. And he just helped me from the very beginning with anything I needed because I didn't understand anything about lighting or how to make a non-traditional space interesting.
I love that. And if you had taken any different step, maybe one of them wouldn't have been there along the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You would have not maybe connected with them.
It's true. I'm so lucky that they're around. I mean, I'm so lucky to have them. And to have a staff that is willing to go above and beyond and don't get any money for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, especially at the beginning, really nobody got any money. I mean, it was like we were all working endless hours and, you know, it's as we're growing and as we're progressing, we're able to reap some of the benefits of that. But geez, like you really have to be devoted to a company to do the amount of work that they have done.
I think that's one of the hardest things is having an idea that you are excited about, but finding like-minded people who are willing to put the hours in and the work in.
You cannot
do
it alone.
And still feel excited about it.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. No, they're the best. I don't know what I would do without them. No. They're not here right now, and it's making me crazy.
I know. And you're also managing...
I'm managing director of the Sal too, and I was brought on as a producer and as an actor for their off-Broadway show, Evolution of Man.
Yes, I saw that, which is
And then they hired me from that production, so I was very fortunate to find them because it's another creative space.
Right.
So
it's so funny. Did you ever expect to fall into being a producer as well?
Yeah. I had no idea. I mean, all of a sudden people were just like, will you help me with my project? And I'd be like, sure.
You're so multifaceted though.
And I was like, I don't even know. I fell into it. It's strange. If somebody told me this is what I would be doing now, I would be like, no, you're crazy. I'm going to be an actor the rest of my life.
Do you feel happier now? Do you feel like you have more of a purpose?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I don't think I could ever just give up acting.
Right.
But I value it in the same way.
Yeah. Well, I think this is because I come from the comedy changed my life. That's when I realized, oh, I have power as like an artist.
Yeah.
That was where I changed. And I think specifically in comedy, you find so many people who become writers. That's why you see so many people on television who are comedy oriented, who are actors, writers, producers.
Right.
And you'll see that on all spectrums of it. I think with you finding this, it's so amazing. And everyone needs to find that path. But I think in theater, I would always feel stuck. So I think it's so amazing you like found this different path and the standard. Now, in regards to your future with Out of the Box and like where you think it's going, do you mind talking about that?
Sure. Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. I think now that we've done the Pink Unicorn, I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is that, I mean, I still want to keep creating the same kind of work. You know, I think it's a little daunting when you do something that you believe in so wholeheartedly and you're like, oh my God, I have to find something else that's just as good as that. So I'm trying to take a step back and enjoy where we are.
Yeah. So I know I forgot to say this, but you as an actor, I think it's amazing that you are you don't have to take that away from yourself.
Yeah.
You know, to do what you're doing.
Yeah.
I meant to add that as a little tidbit.
Mm-hmm.
But in regards to the future of this, how did you get this play? How was it? Was it a submission?
It's no. So I found it randomly. The company that got me my equity card, and now these people are on my board and they give Out of the Box, they're generously a lot of money to produce things sometimes. They have a company in Pittsburgh and they brought this show here for like a couple of days, The Pink Unicorn. And I remember they were like, Liz, can you help us a little bit when we bring our show here to kind of like make sure that, you know, some people see it, you know, maybe do a couple write-ups on it. They were like, we just want in Pittsburgh for them to know that we went there and did like a run of it. And I was like, sure, I don't know how I can help you do that, but I'll try. And I brought some people to see it just to kind of, you know, get the word out. And I had no idea what I was going to see. I was like, The Pink Unicorn, what is that? I was like, I love the title, but what is it? And I didn't even read the synopsis, really. I didn't know much about it. I sat there and it started, and when that first sentence hit, and you always know that something's going to be good if the first sentence is something that hooks you.
Yeah.
And that show started, and I was completely, like, on the edge of my seat the whole time. And I was laughing, and I was crying, and it was special.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I got to do that play. And we were only in our first year at the time, I think. And Alice had done a benefit for me, because I sent her a Facebook message, and she responded, and she decided to do it. And I was like looking for something eventually to do with her, because it had always been my goal to do something with her, because I liked her as a person, but also she was like somebody I idolized. And that show happened, and I was like, God, I wonder if Alice did that show. I bet Alice could do this show. And I bet she could do it really well.
Yeah, your intuition was correct.
And
which
is amazing. Yeah. And I remember thinking to myself, I gotta do that somewhere. I'm gonna put it on the back burner for next year, but I'm gonna send it to her now. So I asked the people from Pittsburgh. It's not published, you know, it's like at least just like sends it to people, and people kind of know about it some places, but they sent it to me, and then I sent it to Alice, and she read it right away, and she didn't say anything about it. She just sent me like a picture or an emoji via text, and I was like, what does that mean? Does that mean yes? What does that mean? And then I didn't hear from her for a little while. And uh-huh. Then I emailed her again, and she was like, Liz, I definitely read it. I'm definitely interested. And I was like, okay, but here are the dates. And she was like, and then I just kept like emailing her about it. And she was like, okay, I really want to do it, but I'm going to forward this over to my agent. And like that, we negotiated in 2 seconds, and she was doing it.
That's amazing.
It was crazy. And I kind of thought to myself, am I actually going to do a play with Alice Ripley?
I love everything about the story so much.
Yeah. It was the coolest and most exciting thing.
Yeah.
I didn't have any money for her at the time either. And the people in Pittsburgh that are incredible and like angels in my life were like, we'll pay for her salary. You have to have her in that show.
I mean, this also shows what kind of character she has.
Yes.
You know, that it really is about the work and what excites her and the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I'm really lucky to say she's become a friend.
That's
and
amazing.
She's not, she spends hours with people after the show because it's so timely and important to her too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know a lot of actors that are that giving, you know, when they do what she does for 90 minutes, which is a giant monologue on stage, and they still have energy to stand at the end of it.
Yeah, it genuinely makes me so happy it's that don't meet your heroes sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I hear of someone who is not only as talented and as amazing as you expected them to be, but also as kind and as giving as like the best version of them you thought up they could be.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. It also shows that being good can actually get you work.
It can.
Not in a way of using it or manipulating, but just that you don't have to push other people off the cliff so that you can stay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a phrase, but I'm going to use that as a phrase.
I like it.
Yeah, thank you. And then what emoji was it? This is not an important question, but I want to know.
I don't really remember. She sends me a lot of emojis of unicorns. And then the Lucy, it was not an emoji. There was a, what's it called? What are they called when they're like, I'm blanking, the JPEG, whatever. It was like Lucy with a thumbs up, like after she does that.
Oh,
like,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. My God, I don't know.
I'm not very good with those sort of things, so I wouldn't know.
But
on
she
a good
would,
day,
or like she would send me like hearts or something like that.
Yeah.
Or like, I'd be like,
it was just big enough
like,
you can't interpret.
I'd be like, Ripley just texted me.
I have some really dumb ones I'll send to friends that have nothing to do with the conversation. It's just a part
of
the bit.
She's like funny. She likes emojis.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. So are you hoping that there's a new life for the show?
I do. I mean, I don't know. Everybody is like really interested in doing it different places, which is really cool. I've never been more confused in my entire life. But, you know, it's cool. People are like handing me cards and they're like, what do you think about like a Broadway run or an off Broadway run or like a region? And I'm like, that sounds cool. I don't.
I have to be honest. When I was watching it tonight, I can very easily see it going to even a bigger theater.
Because
the show carries itself. It doesn't need a lot, but it's important enough. And I think good enough show that you can fill in those seats with that.
Yeah, I think it's a special piece. I think what really needs to happen is people need to see it regionally.
You had mentions about like maybe taking on the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yes, absolutely. I think that Alice deserves to do it in a larger scale. She's too good in
it. I think you're right, though. It's for what it's talking about and the message it has.
Yeah. I think it belongs in the South. I think it belongs touring in the South. I think it's a catalyst. I think it's a call to action. So that's always going to be my dream for it, because I think that's the larger purpose.
I think so.
Because, you know, you can have success in by the buckets. And like, I used to be like, yes, Broadway. And now I'm like, Broadway is great. I think that there's a lot going for Broadway, of course. But, you know, the world is at risk right now. So I think the larger goal for a show like this is to really propel it forward with the world.
Yeah, the way my brain was just like, more need to see this. But I think you're right in who those people are. Mm-hmm. I think it's a show that has a message. And
does.
That's where it should go. I absolutely agree. When you do you ever imagine, because you haven't had your shows go regional or tour, have you yet?
No, not yet.
Yeah. Would you ever maybe... Well, I guess it's all circumstantial. It depends on how it all develops.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is definitely a show that should happen.
I mean, I know that people want to do it regionally. A woman yesterday emailed me dates to do it in Jersey next year.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's great. I mean, I want as many people to pick it up and take it as possible, if anything, for the playwright, because she deserves it too. Yeah. This piece has been out there a long time, and I'm surprised somebody else didn't pick it up.
It's interesting that it's been around for a while, because
since 2013, she wrote it in 2013.
It feels like it could have been written yesterday.
I know. And when I heard it, I was like, my God, she wrote this in 2013?
Yeah.
And it still holds up. I mean, we worked on it so that it's even more of today, but... and updated it a bit based on some reviewers that were like, oh, this could have changed, or this could have changed, just to get it a little tighter. But it was really, I mean, surprising that she wrote that then, and this is happening now. Mm-hmm. What's happening is happening in our world.
So. I'm from North Carolina, and I know that lady. You know what I mean? And just the subtleties, because you said that the playwright also is writing from a personal experience.
Yeah, she, it's not, she says it's not autobiographical, but it kind of is. So her daughter is now a they. And Elise had a really hard time. She was worried a lot of the time, because they were living, I think, in Illinois. So they weren't living in the South. But when her child came out as genderqueer and then said that she identified as a man, that was really hard for Elise to accept. And for her, it was more that she was scared to have her child go out in the world, because she was like, she's going to be shot. She's going to be murdered on the street, because she knew where they were living. And that was sort of her, when she started putting pen to paper, and she always was a writer, but she really decided to write this play. Mm-hmm. So it was a perspective from a southern aspect, but it was her. I mean, they were based on experiences in her life.
The specificity kind of gives that away.
Yeah.
This is someone, or someone that she knows, or she spent time there.
Yeah.
You know, you can't write it without having that personal touch to it.
No, you can't.
No.
Yeah.
No. So you know what? I'm going to ask us a couple questions.
Okay.
I want to make sure we pitch where people can donate, where they can follow things. But in regards to, I have two questions, which usually I have just one. Do you have advice for artists who feel they are undervalued and boxed in by their physical specifics, out of their control, and traditional typecasting limitations? So do you have any advice for people who just feel stuck? Maybe they're not even in this market. They're in LA or somewhere completely different.
I would say don't wait for your opportunities. Create them yourself. No job is going to determine what you can really do. So why not create it on your own? Don't wait around for people to give you the answer, to make you feel like you're accepted. You can value yourself if you create your own path.
That's a perfect answer. Don't change anything. And then the last question is advice for anyone wanting to start their own theater company.
Oh, wow. I mean, do it by any means. Definitely do it. But come in knowing that if you start off based in fear, you won't get anywhere. Just go, just keep going. If you know your mission statement, get a really clear one, because that's everything. It's everything for grant writing. It's everything to fund your organization. But also really believe in what you're creating, the company that you're creating, and don't give up on it. And don't be afraid to say, you know, I don't know what to do, and do it anyway. Even when you're like, I don't have the money for it, I don't know how I'm going to do it, just go for it.
I'm sitting here so inspired. I'm like, I hope that it comes across. Like,
people, I'm saying that now. Oftentimes I don't feel that way, but I will say never give up on it.
Right. That's part of the reason I wanted these, because I meet inspiring people all the time that I sit with, and I'm like, you make me want to be better. And I remember how insecure I was and how alone I felt, especially growing up in North Carolina and not having people in the arts that are wanting a career, or wanting to be involved in that or make a difference in that way. Mm-hmm. So part of this is, like, I think of people maybe who aren't in our circle,
right,
who would, you know, who feel alone. So last question.
Sure.
Or I guess not a question per se, but would you mind giving us information about the company and where people can fund it, give you donations,
Like that? Our website is OOTBtheatrics.com. And then we also have Venmo, which is really helpful for people. It's at OOTBtheatrics.
I'll be Venmoing, yeah.
Thanks. thanks for doing that. Yeah, donations are always helpful.
Yeah. And is there anything else, anything coming up that we should be following?
The last show that we're doing is Baby, the musical by Richard Maltby and David Shire.
So good.
And we're going to do it in a Midtown loft that people will buzz up to, and you'll walk into the couple's apartment, and it should be really fun. I've always kind of wanted to do that show and do it in a different way because it's so old school.
But I don't think it's been done in a long
time. It hasn't been done. And it's a really good, I think it's going to be a really good cast.
Yeah, so. I always think of just like, there's two songs from it that I always think of.
I Want It All.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's the other one? Story Goes On?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so thanks so much, Liz.
Thanks for doing this.
I'm so glad you took some time away.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, thanks for having me. This was fun.
This episode was brought to you by our sponsor. Thanks again for tuning in. Love this episode of The Art of Not Making It? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It's always appreciated, I promise. I read every single review, and they mean so much to me. Thanks again, and see you next Thursday.